Welcome back to the Y-Hawk Periodically, it's Groundhog Day podcast, because didn't we do this show after the Panthers lost 2-1 to the Flyers in a very frustrating game where Sammy Urson made a bunch of saves?
I'm pretty sure, but this, I could care less about it. We knew, that was kind of a scheduled loss for me. It's not great that they can't seem to find energy or show up against the Flyers this year. We'll see if they can do it in Philadelphia at the end of the month. They play them one more time. But it was like kind of one of those things where there was a lot of other stuff going on. There was coming back from the road trip. There were some tired legs. And then there was all the excitement of trade deadline, Tarasenko's first game. And people, you know, there were still, because the trade deadline didn't pass at that point, there were still probably some players in the locker room and then some that would eventually be on the ice that were a little unsure of their positioning. Possibly whether that meant, like, are they bringing somebody in to take my spot? Which, you know, they kind of, you know, they brought in Kyle Okposo, who, you know, we'll get into that in a little more details. But, you know, there's whether the people thought that they might have been traded away or they might have just got knocked out of the lineup by a trade. Flyers were hungrier. They have a lot of more focused energy at the moment. Everybody in that locker room, including the coach, is trying to prove to everybody that they can still win games and still make a difference and be worthwhile of going to the playoffs. And they, like I said last time, they see Florida as a measuring stick game and they're going to be ready. And if Florida does not give their A game, they're not going to win. Philadelphia probably gave their B-plus game. Florida gave their C game. And it was down to the wire. So if you look at that, that's not too bad.
No, it's not too bad. I just find it amusing that we have done a podcast after two 2-1 Flyers wins over the Panthers this year that played exactly the same.
I find it, I cannot explain. I mean, I can maybe try to start parsing it, but like why the Flyers seem to be the Achilles heel of this Florida team. Not even, it seems like for a while the Panthers were beating up on the Flyers, but since the Tortorella change, it's kind of flipped back over.
Yeah, last
over.
Year the bad Torts team beat the Panthers twice in games the Panthers absolutely should not have lost, and you are correct about that. But it's always weird, like, we always talk about bogey teams in soccer for whatever reason. One team beats another, doesn't matter why or how. Hockey, it kind of happens that way. Like, Paul Maurice has lost all four games to the Winnipeg Jets since he became the Panthers head coach. Weird, but it happened. This year, the Panthers lost two games to the Minnesota Wild for inexplicable reasons. Don't know why, it happened. This year, the Panthers have lost two games to the Flyers for somewhat inexplicable reasons. They've lost 4 of 5 with Torts as the head coach. It's bizarre. I don't get it. It used to be the bogey team was Carolina, and the Panthers figured that out. Don't know. Weird stuff happens. It is, the NHL is strange. That game yesterday, it was an interesting watch, but as long as the Panthers don't make it a trend, not too concerned about it.
The concern, though, is when it comes to, I mean, it's changed recently, luckily, but when it comes to the Flyers and the Panthers, that's potentially a round one matchup.
Did you see my tweet about that yesterday where I said, Torts team going up against a possible President's Trophy winner, and and I had Skeletor.
Yeah, and maybe that's, you know, part of it. Like, Torts is just such a good motivator that his teams are going to always do well against the games that are, you know, you can get teams up for. You can increase execution by 15 or 20% by getting guys going and getting the adrenaline pumping in a positive manner, in a constructive, productive manner. There's a lot of times where adrenaline and getting the boys going can result in the wrong things. We've seen that with the Panthers for sure, and definitely the Flyers in recent years. So I mean, I think what Torts is doing is great. I don't want to spend too much time on the Flyers and everything, but
We'll get to them a little later, because there are trade deadline moves I would like to talk about with them.
their trade deadline was, it was the 1 foot in, 1 foot out mixed bag that you knew Briere and Jones were going to give you, and it still hurt to get. And then with Zito, it was the same thing. You got what you were expected, but it still, and unlike the Flyers, where it didn't feel good, this felt good, and it felt better than I was expecting, even though we got pretty expected results.
So let's talk about the players that they acquired. And one of them was definitely on the list of players that I wrote about, and we spent our last show talking about at length. And that was Tarasenko. When I started thinking of the names of players that the Panthers could go after, the first one I thought of was Tarasenko. I had forgotten that his family spends its time in Florida, they spends his summers in Florida, and they weren't with him in Ottawa. I completely had forgotten about that, but I shouldn't have because, Russians, South Florida, we get it. But when you looked at what they were going to get with Tarasenko, he still scores. He is maybe, and you can disagree with me or not, maybe the best pure finisher on the team. We've talked about this at length, that the best Panthers finishers aren't necessarily the shooters, and the guys who score a ton for the Panthers are volume guys. Even though this year the best finisher is Sam Reinhart, but he already in that
I
first
agree.
game, you saw him getting into those positions where, like in the end of the game, where he got into a position to get a really good shot away. And it feels like there isn't a ton of a big learning curve for him to play with Barkov and Reinhart. And I was going to spend some time talking about, where is he going to play? And I thought, honestly, they were going to put him there. Like, this is the softest landing. You don't have to worry about defense when those two are on the ice. And you're going to get your chances because those two generate a ton. And it offers, as Bill Zito said, a lot of flexibility for what they can do in the top nine. Now you can move guys around and not have a drop off seemingly anywhere. And it balances the lineup a lot better, even though, it's clear who the best line is and the second best line and then the third one. But it offers balance and it offers Paul Maurice options, which with Nick Cousins, you didn't get because you either had Nick Cousins on that line or he was going to be a net negative somewhere else. Now you don't have that, and I think Tarasenko is going to score some goals. I don't think he needs to score a ton, but if he scores a big goal at a big moment, then the trade's completely worth it.
I think you're absolutely right when you say Tarasenko might be the best finisher. Verhaeghe might have the better shooting technique or the better rhythm, and Reinhart might be in the better form right now. But Tarasenko, the one thing I tweeted, and it, we've all probably been watching the Tarasenko highlights, and whether it's the Blues Cup run with the Rangers in the playoffs last year, and kind of down the stretch, or old or recent with the Sens, you look at it, and all of his goals are either right under the bar, up high, or if they're low, they're the ones that make the sound, like the big thumping sound where, like, it gets buried in the net. The ref has to go and dig it out. The goalie's putting his stick and like helping prop up the net so the ref can like find the puck and move it out quicker. Like one of those where like they say, he's good at burying the puck. That's what they mean. And Tarasenko, like that's what he's good at right now at his age. That's what he can give you. We talked about having a left shot that could play both sides. He's a right winger. They're putting him on the left wing. I like it. I like it because I think it's going to make it easier in the D zone. Yes, you might be thinking, well, switching sides, how's that going to be easier for him? But he's been playing the off wing, which means on the breakout, you're kind of trying to catch it in on your backhand. That's a little harder. It's going to be easier for him to catch it onto his forehand and kind of play into the system that way. And as they go down the ice, they can always swap sides and get into, and Tarasenko can get into that right onto his offhand side more off the cycle. Sides are less important in the offensive zone. And in the offensive zone, they frequently line up on opposite sides, whether forwards or D, all the time for faceoffs and stuff, and kind of play like that for a bit off the cycle. So I'm interested to see, because the flexibility is crazy. I don't know if Tarasenko is going to make it as far down as the third line. He might, but you're right. You have two to three options for every line at each position besides center. You know, your centers are kind of, other than the third line center, which if you want, you could play around with, but probably is set in stone. It's just what wingers do you want to have? And it's perfect for the chess matchup that is the playoffs, and that Maurice has shown that he can really get a hold of with the Panthers in this division.
He already did it last year, and it was the masterstroke that worked. And God forbid they need to do it again if Nick Cousins is not scratched. They can do it again if they have to. But it's now a break glass in case of emergency rather than option one. And I think that makes the Panthers a better overall team because, as you said, what happened with that Cousins line with Bennett and Tkachuk in the playoffs is, and we kind of memory hold this a little bit, was in that series against the Bruins, Jim Montgomery conceded that line. He's like, we're not stopping it. We have to stop Barkov, Verhaeghe, and Duclair, and Lundell, Ostarainen, and Reinhart. They just conceded that Bennett, Tkachuk, Cousins line, and they lost the series. The Leafs had no way of dealing with it, and they conceded the series. And then we saw what Carolina, it's just Matthew Tkachuk makes plays, but once Vegas figured it out, they didn't have another way to go because Nick Cousins only fit on that line for very specific reasons. And then the whole thing fell apart. And this postseason, teams are going to know how to deal with that a little bit better, I think. And the versatility now, you've got Verhaeghe on that line. Well, what is Carter Verhaeghe? He can play a lot more physical if you want, but if you overcommit to Bennett and Tkachuk, well, here's this incredibly elite killer in the third period in overtime. And then Tarasenko's there on the Barkov line. And once you get Rodriguez playing with Lundell and Lostarainen, you don't lose anything on that line. And if you have to move stuff around, well, then you can move Reinhart back to that line, and they already have chemistry because they've played with each other. And as you said, the matchups work just a lot better now. And it's that depth in the top three lines with three elite centers is why the Panthers are going to be favorites in the East because no one else can match up with them. And now they've got the versatility and the football term of being multiple. And that's something that Paul Maurice now can go to, and he's not afraid of it. It's not, I have one trick, right? Remember 2 years ago in the playoffs when they went to Huberto, Barkov, and Giroux, and that was the one trick and it didn't work. And then once that was there and they played that card, it was over. And then last year, once that Cousins Bennett Tkachuk line faded in the Golden Knights series, it was over. They didn't have another option. That's the next step of an evolution. They now have multiple different options. And Tarasenko fits so well. And I think you can hide him defensively on all of the lines because the Panthers system allows you to do that. And I didn't think he was bad defensively in the first game.
I'm not worried defensively because like Nick Cousins isn't good defensively.
This is also true. Nick
Like,
Cousins is very
you
bad
know,
defensively.
Bennett came into the Panthers with not a great reputation, and it was some point during the regular season last year where he was developing defensively like he was a prospect, you know? Like it was really great to see. And so we saw Tarasenko already blocking shots for the Panthers in game one. I think he's going to be good enough for what he is. Like that's a big kind of asterisk around good enough,
Look,
but
and I think what we'll see is when we get
yeah.
down the line in the playoffs, he will be targeted. That's just going to be how it is because every team's got weaknesses. But you can cover for that in a way that, you know, okay, you're going to target him defensively, but watch out the other end. He could finish a play, and that's it.
That's why I think they want to put him on his forehand, because he's going to be targeted in this it, when the filming, and you know, you have a series and teams are going to be like, okay, look, They have some defensemen on their offhand side. They got a lot of lefties. Let's use that. Where are we going to pressure down to the boards? Who's weakest? They're a very strong defensive team, but who's weakest defensively? Let's look for these guys. Who gives up the most zone entries? Who gives up the most turnovers on breakouts? That's all stuff that you can get into before games and in between games a lot more than you do in the regular season, where the opponent and stuff is switching, where it doesn't make sense to put so much time and energy into that, where you're pl but if you're seeing them 4 to 7 times and the season's on the si on the line, obviously it makes sense to do all that work. So it's going to be interesting. I really like what the Panthers did. We talked about the finishing skill. He's a big, like, for a shooter, for some guy who's a little more skilled, he's got some grinder in him. He's
He
got
took
some
some
workhorse
hits
in
against the
him.
Flyers. He got punished more than
Yeah.
a few times, and he just bounced right back and kept going. And I like that, because they didn't win the game, but he got that shot with, what was it, 5 seconds left after
Yeah.
getting punished all game. And I'm thinking to myself, that's going to be the playoffs every single night when you're playing for this team and the way other teams are going to match up to you. If you can stand up to mini you in Philly, then you could stand up to whatever is going to be thrown at you in whatever round is coming. And that's going to be so key
Yeah.
because, as you said, he will be targeted.
Yeah, and he's got some trophies, I mean, at the for his country, for Russia. And he's got the cup with St. Louis. He's worn letters for Russia, for St. Louis.
And he
And then
wanted badly to be a Panther. Like, we've seen that all the time now.
that was replicated in Okposo, Kyle Okposo from Buffalo. This is somebody who was a leader in the on the Islanders, was a leader in Buffalo. Now, they didn't have a lot of great success, but it definitely wasn't his fault, just like it wasn't Steven Weiss's fault that, the
You
Panthers didn't
mentioned
have
this to me
success.
as we were talking
But
about Bill Zito recently, and I want to get to a point about the Panthers in a general context because of something I was listening to a little bit later, and everybody talking about wanting to come to Florida and wanting to play in Florida for
yeah.
the Lightning or the Panthers. It's a general point that I want to make because I think people are framing this discussion incorrectly, is what I'll say. But on a
Well,
Poso.
there's a lot of people who want to go to Vegas, and because of that, Vegas is what? Able to extract and leverage people at the deadline if they're willing to deal with some penalties, like trading first and having some contracts and stuff that you don't get to sign, and you have to kind of live with.
Or, in other words, being
But
ruthless.
yeah, but they, they're fine with it, and because of this, because the Sharks wanted to do right by Tomas Hertl, they traded him and 2/3 for a late first round draft pick in David Edstrom, who I like enough, but that's like a middle six, maybe center, probably winger, and a first round in 2025 for Hertl in a on for to add that for the cup run. That's And th to get some thirds back, so you get, you make up for some of those picks you lost. That you're the It's just trade fodder for future deadlines for the Knights. That's pretty good. I mean, I know prices were great, but but to get back to Florida, Florida seems to be targeting the right people, and the right people are responding by wanting to be in Florida. And you look at a guy like Okposo, who hasn't been in the playoffs since I was 26.
He hasn't been in
That's
the
seven,
playoffs
eight
since
years.
Trocheck was tripped.
Yep.
Seriously, that was the last time he was in the playoffs. When the Panthers were on the come up, but it was a mirage, and every Panthers fan, the only thing they can remember from that series, other than in my case, I remember Allen Quine, but
Oh.
Trocheck was tripped is the only other thing people remember from that series.
Yeah.
Like, that's it.
One of the things that is Okposo is again is a wider body. He's sturdy. He's got strength. He likes to grind. He's got the finishing skill. Obviously, it's a different fin level finishing skill. But when we're talking fourth line winger,
He
he's got
finishes better than Nick Cousins
yeah.
does.
Two seasons ago, he had 21 goals. So it's not that long ago that, and he can lift the puck in close. And that's like the biggest thing I've been harping on. So for them to go out to get two guys who are big, physical, guys who've been captains for teams, guys who've had letters at international stages and on different teams in the NHL, and guys who are really want to be there and do well here. Tarasenko definitely is looking for a contract here, and it's probably going to be a nice little if it gets done. But he has to perform, and his family's here. He's got a lot of incentive. Okposo, like we talked about, he wants to do well in the playoffs. He has not been here in a while, and he wants to win. He's a guy that's been basically running through the wall for the Buffalo Sabres because he wants to continue playing hockey and trying to win and trying to get into the playoffs. And, he's just a team first guy. That's the kind of guy I would want to add on the fourth line.
How many times did you hear during the whole discussion about the trade deadline was the chemistry thing? And I mean, we're not there. I can't comment on the chemistry in the same way that our friends who are down there and are covering them at games and at the new practice facility can. Even then, they can't necessarily talk about chemistry in the same way because you're not in the room and chemistry is a nebulous black box. Like, the only time we ever really talked about that was Keith Yandel, and I mean, some of us, and including me, made assumptions about that. And I mean, look, they subtracted him and they got better, but there were other reasons for that. But that's my point is like, when you're talking about getting the right mix of guys, Bill Zito's like, I don't know if this is going to work or not. It's always, you never know if it's going to work or not. Last year, they did nothing and they made it to the cup final. You couldn't have predicted that. But they find, as you said, the right people, and the right people want to be in Florida. For whatever reasons, whether it's Tarasenko for the reasons you mentioned, or Okposo because, man, I could actually win the cup here, and I could play the role that I need to play, and I'm fine with that. Like that is a sign of an organization that has built itself up to become one of the best in the league, and that has become attractive for not just one reason, but for a lot of different reasons to different kinds of players. And that's the sign of a really well-run shop here. And they didn't give up anything to get him.
And I mean, we're talking about an organization that is just hope. I mean, I'm knocking on wood here. It's just at the beginning of a long run of success here. Their practice arena just opened. When Barkov and Tkachuk go to re-sign for their, sunset contracts here, the practice facility is still going to be under a decade. It's still going to be
They might
new,
be playing in a new
vibrant.
rink in Fort Lauderdale by that point.
Right, like there is a lot to like here besides just the weather. There's just a lot of freshness, but that's something that Florida is going to be using to their advantage to get. I mean, Okposo, they got a decent. The prices were so much lower than expected this year. I think everybody's kind of skewed, but I don't think that Zito stole anybody. I think Zito paid. He got maybe some discount, maybe got a 5 or 10% discount on some stuff, and he spent smartly. But I don't think that meant he ripped anybody off, or he stole anybody, or he was
I mean,
Keith the Thief
compare it
Allen.
to what happened two deadlines ago when the Panthers were doing what they were doing and what they paid for Sherrod and what they paid. It's a different kind of trade deadline for them, but it was also a different market. And I think using those two as barometers is actually interesting because the Panthers could have been in on Gensel, but they didn't need to be.
And then last deadline, it's not like they didn't make any moves because it was, yes, it was wise, but it wasn't like they were not making moves because that's what they thought, like, oh, no, that we have the best team right here. We don't need anything. They didn't think it was worth this. They thought save assets for the summer, save assets for, that's what they were thinking. That if this team goes for on a run, good, that's great, but let's not. So, and then the year before that, it was all in. definitely had different deadlines, but it's all been, for the most part, measured and kind of expected. You knew going into it he was going to go all in. You knew he
And
was
his
probably
first
going to stand
deadline was
pat
obviously
last
a
year.
really interesting deadline because he got core pieces at that deadline, which, nobody necessarily expected that you were going to get, and he targeted a different kind of player. So his evolution in terms of what he's looking at, what he's trying to do at trade deadline shows the evolution of a team and the evolution of a general manager.
I was looking into, just because I wanted to show that, making moves at the deadline doesn't prevent cup winners. And I look back and the last 13, let's just say 12 out of the last 13, or just say 12 and not really count St. Louis, because all they really did was add Delzato, who played a few games. That was their one move. But everybody added somebody. And a lot of times, even if it was one ad, it was like the second overall center. It was a Michael Hanzus who played some important minutes for the Blackhawks. Or
Antoine
it
Vermette, if
was,
you're looking at the Blackhawks again.
Rich Peverly and Kelly for Boston, and then they were getting backup goalies on top of that, or sixth and seventh
Well, I
defensemen,
mean, you
you know,
just
because
last year it
Calvert
was
left.
Barbashev, then the year before it was Lehkonen,
Yeah.
like.
Oh, there was, I mean, the most in the last 13 years that I just went back 13 years. I didn't feel like doing any more than that. That just put
But
us
this is
back at
that's a
2010.
modern enough sample size, I
Yeah,
think.
it just goes back to 2010. But like, four was the most, and the Avs and Boston in 2010. So like, kind of were the only two that hit four. A lot, three and one was the most common, and the Panthers did three, four if you count. But I didn't count waiver wire ads. But that
Well, I
you
want to
could
talk
count
about
Bjorn
that in a
Borg, but.
second, but when I look at what they've done, and the other thing about Oposo, the other thing about what they've done is, again, it gives them the ability to throw out different looks. Like, again, I know we're picking on Nick Cousins, and I made the joke about you saw the Pokemon with you saw the jersey, the Pokemon with team stuff, right? One of my favorite Twitter accounts, and it was a Rattata with the Panther
Yeah,
stuff, and I
but
was.
like, let's not just talk about guys not performing, because that's not going to be the only thing that's going to happen in the course of a
Oh,
playoffs.
injury, of course,
There's going
obviously.
to be injuries, there might be suspensions, there might be guys who get five in games, there might be guys who get a 10
Oh,
minute
there will be a
misconduct.
Panther that's probably named Nick Cousins or Matthew Tkachuk that gets five in a game at some point.
In the playoffs, you can't afford to be like figuring it out on the bench for 10 minutes. If you are in a 1-1 game and Matthew Tkachuk gets a 10 minute misconduct for saying something, or whoever, I'm just using Matthew Tkachuk because that's the most like
Likely.
funny example. You're gonna have to figure out, okay, well, who can we put on the second line? Who can we do this and everything? And having the most amount of flexibility means, okay, I'm not worried about messing up Barkov because I know I have guys that can play on the right of Barkov and the left of him, and I got two, I have a right hand option, I got a left hand option to move up, I got somebody who can, shoot, somebody who can penalty kill, and we can figure this out really quickly. I think that's super important. Because every shift, and like a lot of times it is like a tug of war where it's a game of inches and you're just fighting to pull momentum back on your side, or fighting to push and tilt the ice the other way. And you, even if it's just switching lines up to finish a period, to send a message or something like that, or to try to get around a matchup, like, if Carolina is trying to move Gensel away from some people, and Maurice decides, you know what, I'm just going to take Reinhardt, and I'm just going to say, Reinhardt, whenever you see Gensel and Aho go on the ice, get on the ice. And Aho's just going to, I mean, and Reinhardt's just going to go play with whoever, or Reinhardt's going to play with Lundell and Lofgren. And they're just going to shadow that line, and you're just going to shut them down. And like, you can do that just just when you're, in Carolina chasing it, and then go back to your regular lines in Florida and turn up the heat on them and just pour it on and run three
Well, even in
lines.
the first round, you're gonna, let's say it's Tampa. Well, what are they gonna do? They're gonna put Cirelli on a certain line, and now, hey, I've got a line to get away from them, right? You know what I mean? Like, that's the kind of matchup, the
Yeah.
stuff that you can do.
Yeah, so you can move Tarasenko down and try to play, you spread out your talent and make them really chase three lines. You can, and so I like that. I mean, it seems like they're not super strict. And I think there's a lot of teams that when they have smart people and they have data and they have the money and resources, they get too into it. They overthink. They get too specialized. I think of the Buffalo rebuild with general manager Tim Murray as a great example of this. And you can tell what defensemen they look for, what forwards they kind of look for, and like how they look to address their needs. And they will go out and do it in different ways. I don't think a lot of people thought Kyle Okposo to fill a bottom six role, or to be added depth. But here we are, and when you think and you look at it, you see how it fits. You see how it fits the pattern and is obvious and is like the next part of the sequence, and it makes sense. And you can see how it fits. We talked about the chemistry. Montour, Reinhard. I'm trying to think of, how many Buffalo people do we have now, right? That
Oh,
is that
Casey
it?
Fitzgerald doesn't count. No. Rodriguez played in Buffalo too.
So, I mean, like, there's enough guys who obviously have went to Zito can go to and say, listen, we're talking to Okposo. There's a we're working around trade and the trade protection and everything like this. But while we're doing that, do you think he'd fit in here? Do you think like it's worth, bringing him down and uprooting the family and everything like that for him, and get a sense of like, how do you think he'd fit in? Do you think he'd be good if, he wasn't playing every day, or do you think, he'd be good taking a slow approach for the rest of the season and that kind of stuff. I think there's a lot of, and then you look at what, Okposo and Tarasenko are guys who have better finishing skill, but but what you're looking for them to do, they have the finishing skill left. And a lot of what you're banking on is just the innate parts that don't kind of go away unless you stop playing. So I like that. And I can't wait. I just want to talk about the waiver pickup, Tobias Bjornfoot,
33 minutes into this show.
which is great because that was his number in LA
Funny.
when
Well, you also have to say, some of these are bits. Everything's a bit, really. But some of them turn into reality because maybe people on the Panthers really do listen to Y Hockey, speaking of bits. And I want to talk about this just briefly because it's a really good move that not only is signaling a good process, and yes, Panthers claim Swedish defenseman on waivers, it always works. We do have to talk about the Forsling deal, but I think the thing that I like about it the most is it's a good sign of, like, even now, you add a good body, you add somebody who can clearly play, they rate him quite highly, and nobody else in the league wanted him because the Panthers are 32nd in the waiver order, and
Yeah.
they know that they've got a guy not only for now, but they could need in the future because the cap situation with the raises that people are getting means there's going to be more opportunities and he could grow into a bigger role in the future. And this is a very good young player to get that you don't have to spend assets to acquire because they don't have any. Like, it's just good
Yeah.
future proofing, and it's what good teams do. And we spent the early formative years of Y Hockey bemoaning the fact that the Panthers weren't a good team in doing these smart things. And now they're actually doing all of it. It's incredible.
Yeah, so I mean, I really I'm gonna be honest. I'm biased. I liked him in the draft year. I thought, he was a mid to late first round pick. I like some of the other guys that, like Victor Soderstrom, more than him. Obviously, they haven't matriculated or done, much better than him since. But I was watching some of the draft, the video when he's getting drafted, and they're showing the highlights and Pierre, and everybody's talking about him. Pierre said this was one of the best draft day comparables he's seen. And the draft day comparable was, can you guess? Did you see the
You
tweet?
tweeted it, but I
Okay, yeah.
forgot, so.
Okay. Well, Ryan McDonough. And I think that there's a lot of Panthers fans who think if we get, three-fourths Ryan McDonough and, with the Swedish flair, or we get three-fourths of Gus Forsling, who's quickly becoming our Ryan McDonough, I think, you're going to get a lot of happy fans and you're going to get 10 times value on a waiver claim. He's such a strong skater in all directions. It's not just speed, it's not just balance. It's being able to open up his hips. It's being able to make contact and keep contact and cut and keep cutting down an angle and forcing someone into the boards while pivoting, and being able to hang on that. He's not a big guy. He's not Mikkola big, and you can see Mikkola has that skill of doing that and like being able to press somebody and keep somebody on the boards while being able to pivot or turn and address a loose puck or whatever. He has that ability, but I also think he has some of the calmness and puck passing and headsy, see the play a little faster and a little differently than the rest of the league. That Zito and the Pro Scouts have seen with Montour, Forsling, and some of these other ads. For me, I don't know how much this is going to help them this year. Maybe Bjornfoot rests some guys down the stretch and he maybe jumps in an injury, but I think this is really, let's get this guy in. Let's get him practicing with the team because he's on waivers. We have a chance to get him now. And next year, he's going to be a nice, affordable roster, sixth or seventh defenseman who has potential, and I think has a higher ceiling and more runway left than a guy like Mahura or Carlson. And it's kind of time to turn over those leaves because it just doesn't seem to be happening.
So I wanted to make the point that I'd like to see him play, particularly at the back. Like, what's really funny about this Panther schedule is they're playing a lot of good teams, like quasi-playoff games almost every night until you get to the Canadian road trip when they play Ottawa and Montreal and then the final
Is that like
homestand.
a Canadian tuxedo?
Kind of, yeah, I guess. And then they get to play some not great teams. And look, winning the President's Trophy is nice. I don't think they care about that as much as, I mean, the jinx is the jinx, whatever. But like getting him in to see what he can do, because again, you might need him in the playoffs. It's always possible. And what then he can do fitting into the system and getting his legs under, because you're correct. Like, they're gonna, Oliver Ekman-Larsson's gonna get paid too much to stay next year, whether they keep Montour or not. We also know that they're gonna have to keep some powder dry somewhere. Because Reinhardt's raise is going to be, what it is. We already know what Forsling's raise is. And this guy can be found money. And you have the cap space to make this move now, as you say, just do it. And it's future-proofing while also it's not a bad move in the present because he could play to give Oliver Ekman-Larsson a night off when, you're going to need him for the playoffs. And next year, like, the odds, like, they might trade Mahura and get a draft pick. Like, no offense to Josh Mahura, but, like, the world happened, you know what I mean? Like, this is the way to keep your organization ticking over in a way, and it keeps everybody on their toes too. It reminds, like, you can't get comfortable here, you know what I mean? Because now it's like there's always somebody who could come and take your spot. It's friendly competition, and that's what good organizations have.
And you know, let's just, you know, maybe this doesn't mean anything for Mahora. Maybe Mahora is, you know, still on the team, and Balinskas is the one that's, you know, still fighting for the spot or whatever. Who knows, right? But the thing is, Mahora obviously there was some limitations this year in form and in what they were kind of looking and asking him to do. He definitely has a little bit more of an edge and bite to his game than Bjornfoot right now, and is more confident to use that, especially in the playoffs. So he might even get, you know, more of the playing time this year. But I do agree. I think this is just good turnover, good changeover.
Got an NHL quality defenseman for nothing without spending any assets, which they don't have.
They didn't really spend any. They spent a second. No, they spent a third and maybe a second third, but or it's most likely a fourth. They didn't really spend too much. I mean, they got rid of Shalin. But I mean, again, that's an AHL defender who you don't need to be around just because he's Swedish, because you added in another Swedish defenseman.
Sure did.
You know, and that seventh that maybe turns it. Is there?
It's the seventh that would turn into a fifth if they win the cup.
If they go to the cup, does it turn into like a six?
No, it's just seventh to fifth.
See, that's stupid. I feel like it should. I feel like I would, like, even if I was Zito, I'd be like, all right, dude, we'll give you a six if we go to the cup. We'll just bump it up. Because, like, how you just go from a seventh to a fifth? But,
well, it's a 2020 4-5th that becomes a 2026 third if they win the Stanley Cup for Tarasenko. It's really odd. But
I want to know what happened. That first round, something changed in like the calculators that all the teams use now to figure out what picks are worth and, you know, what the price of these rentals and stuff are going to be. Something happened where like the only first that got traded were like almost first, like they could be a first or they're a first.
Other than Edmonton, who traded a first for Henrik and Carrick.
Yeah, which, you know, that's...
Back into the first anyway.
That's the Bob Nicholson tax right there.
Well, he's not even there anymore, and yet he's there in spirit. Can I make one more point about this, as I want to talk about, just in general, before we move on to the Flyers and other things? And it comes down to what you hear all the time, because people are getting mad, and it usually comes from certain markets, about why teams like Florida and Tampa and Dallas and Vegas and whatever, you know, or Carolina in this case too, why are they getting all these players that want to play there and not, say, oh, Toronto or Winnipeg or some of these other markets that have different pressures, different situations? And my point is, I was also listening to Sid Sexero, who was guest hosting for Steve Dangle on the Steve Dangle podcast. Congratulations, by the way, on the birth of his daughter. Congrats to him. Wonderful.
Yes. But Sid sometimes can be like the other, like opposite bizarro world Don Cherry at times.
I mean, sometimes. But he has a good point here, and it's on the heat of the Toronto market, which isn't really there. It is there when they lose in the playoffs in five to Florida when they shouldn't. That's definitely part of it. But also, I think about this when it comes to the market itself, and it comes to not just Toronto, but all these markets, and what these people are complaining about. Oh, why are they willing to do all of this hemming and hawing to go to Vegas or Tampa or Florida or Dallas that they wouldn't be to go to a Canadian market? And they're complaining about the taxes. They're complaining about the weather. They're complaining about all of these things. But don't you think that misses the point when what you're actually looking at are just the best run teams in the league? It just so happens that all of them are in the Sun Belt right now that we're talking about. Like, the Vegas Golden Knights have won a Stanley Cup. They've made four conference finals in 6 years of existence. They're a really well-run team. They do things a little differently than some people might like, but they're a really well-run team. Tampa's been the best-run team in pro sports for a decade, and the Panthers, we've joked about it, but have aped the Lightning in every single possible way they could and are now trying to build a version that, you know, Elliot Friedman and others are directly getting from sources. Right. And basically, we want to be Tampa East, you know, or Tampa South or whatever. And my point is, what these people are complaining about is not, oh, the market's too tough or the weather. You're complaining that your teams aren't very well run. And that's not a problem for Bill Zito. He's just running a good ship. And it just so happens that he's selling his market better than the Toronto Maple Leafs are selling their market. And this has been my overall point. And it frustrates me because the Toronto market has a bunch of benefits that you don't get in Florida. And yet the Maple Leafs somehow, for whatever reason, seem incapable of selling that. Because there are benefits to living in Ontario as compared to Florida. For one, I think your property insurance is going to be quite a bit less expensive than it would be if you're living in Florida by the beach currently, for a start.
I don't know, just because Toronto...
Oh, Toronto's extremely expensive. I understand that.
My thing is, all the teams mentioned, players want to go there, and the teams are successful for different reasons. Vegas is a unique beast. It's a unique market, and it has a lot of buzz. It has a lot of magnetism. It has a lot of pull right now, and they're winning. Why wouldn't people want to go there? I think taxes are the easy bucket to put it in. Yes, that's kind of true. However, I don't think that's
if
there.
You're rich enough, you can pay the Florida tax rate no matter where you live.
Because even if you adjust for the taxes, the players will still want to go there. And if you look at Vegas, it's cap circumvention and the treatment they get from the NHL for, you know, the fact that the casinos are located there. The NHL has a bunch of new sponsors who headquarters are in Vegas because they're casinos. That the owner, Bill Foley, has a lot of pull and gave a $500 million check to the league and everything, and they need this team to do well. If they need Vegas to be a hockey first town, that is extremely important to the revenue. So if you think that they're going to give a crap that they're using the letter of the law and the LTIR loophole, I mean, I hate Vegas for it. I think the NHL should change the rules, but Vegas is going to constantly keep doing this until the rules are changed. And players,
if your team's not doing it, that's your team's fault.
There's a lot of players who aren't on Vegas who are okay with that policy because they might need that policy to go to Vegas to win. Because at the end of the day, players will want to win, want to go to cool places to live. And, you know, at the end of the day, yes, taxes are nice, blah, blah, blah. That's cool. But they could also go. But no. What I'm saying is I agree with you, because let me go through the other teams. Carolina, they're an interesting market, but it's a different unique market. I mean, they have the tailgates. They have the different fan things. There's a lot of players that went there to raise a family, to have that kind of, you know, that suburban rural experience where with a lot of nature, a lot of this and that, you know, the football games and all that.
Well, that's, I mean, I don't know about going to NC State football games, but I get your point.
There's more than one.
Oh, there are lots of college teams in that area. They're not very good at football. The basketball, on the other hand, I'll give you that. There's a lot of cool college basketball in that area.
There was Cam Norton or Newton there for a while. Cam,
I
Norton.
Mean, Charlotte, but, you know, it is different, Raleigh and right. Charlotte. But,
I will say that, but again.
Nashville, too.
These are all, they're all different markets, and they all win. Like, Nashville went to the playoffs for a long time and went to the cup and almost won. Tampa, you know, they built a different way. They built internally, and it wasn't until the very end where guys wanted to go there. But did guys ever really want to, like, I don't remember Tampa getting guys that wanted to go there and everything like that.
Well,
in the same way that
it used to be owned by a Japanese fraudster and the guy who hired Barry Melrose as a head coach because he felt
like
cool.
But like Carolina, like there's like people want to go to Carolina. I don't and like you hear that. I don't necessarily remember hearing that about Tampa. I don't doubt it, but I think it
Well,
was
because they
more.
stunk for a long time before they became what they are.
But
And the
even
other
when
point I
they're
wanted to
good,
make
what I'm
about.
saying is right. Like, I mean, Hanifin. I was talking with O'Brien, the other Matt of the show that,
Our friend, yes, of course.
always used to be on the show, and he was saying that when Hanifin came out, that was like his preferred destination or one of his preferred destinations. He was saying that's the first I've heard in a long time that, the preferred destination of a player is Tampa. Usually Tampa gets somebody by outbidding, by throwing, an extra first or, a bunch of seconds or whatever to get guys. So I don't even necessarily know if like the people's complaints are really true with Tampa. Like, so I don't, it can't be the taxes. If all of these cities have all different unique sales pitches and different ways of winning and different ways of building a team and can do it. It seems like the issue is like you said, the team's fans that are complaining.
It's not even that, because if this was a legitimate issue, then you'd see it pop up in other sports. Now, maybe there's a handicap because the two teams in Florida in baseball don't spend any money, even though, the Marlins employ a friend of mine. Like, they're not exactly the Yankees. The basketball team, like the Heat are, what they are. I've talked about the comparison between the Panthers and Heat all the time. The Magic are a moribund nothing franchise that makes the NBA Finals once every 15 years. And in the NFL, I'd certainly know about it because I root for one of those franchises and I watch them trip over their own feet all the time because they're stupid. And the Bucs, again, used to be one of the worst run franchises in the NFL, and the Dolphins haven't won a playoff game since I was in elementary school. So it would be a problem in other sports, and it's not. So it's a crutch that hockey fans in certain places use to talk about the fact that their team isn't selling their market and experience as well as it should be. And that is on the teams not figuring that out. Because honestly, I think Vancouver's a pretty cool city. It's just a shame that the owners not run a good team because I think Vancouver's pretty dang cool and I'd like to live there. Yeah, it's very expensive, but not a bad place to live. Yes, your taxes might be high, but who wouldn't want to live in Montreal? That place is cool. Toronto is cool. And there are people in the league who really would like a Winnipeg-style experience, and you have to sell them on that or sell the corporate sponsors on buying tickets. But the point is, every one of these markets is different, and every one of them has unique selling features. And it just so happens that right now, some of them are better at selling it than others, and it tends to be that all of them happen to be in the Sun Belt and low tax states that are the best run teams in the league. And that's not a coincidence. They've figured out how to use that to their advantage. The Panthers used to be awful at this. They had every advantage in the world and they were owned by people who shouldn't have owned professional sports teams. And then it took a Vinny Viola half a decade to figure out how to get it right, and then eventually he got it right. And it took Jeff Vinnick a while to figure out how to get it right, and then he got it right. You know what I mean? Like, these are not givens.
Is it the taxes that Gus Forsling resigned, or is it because Bill Zito is so passionate about his work in this organization and the vision that they're accomplishing right now that he can generate the buy-in that gets Forsling to sign 8 years,
We haven't even
$5.75 million?
talked about the contract yet. I mean,
Yeah, by the way, I was on Cap Friendly. I did a little playing around. I brought back a lot of guys. I'm at a roster of 18 with 3 million. So that means you need a backup goalie, a sixth defense. Well, I mean, it's going to be a little different now because of Bjornfoot. But like if you can get Reinhart for 8.5 and Montour for like 6.8, you can make things work. You can make things work.
You could, and I wanted to, and I wanted to say like Forsling and the Reinhardt, which now it's common knowledge what we talked about for a while, and it wasn't like we were sourced here. I don't have sources to report these things. It was just using my brain of following the Panthers and understanding how they do business. When Friedge said Reinhardt's going to come under Kachuk, and I'm again, why hockey never wrong just early. I was like, of course he is, because the Panthers have established their process now. And it's like, yes, you might get a little bit more take-home pay in Florida than you would in Ontario, but what they have is everybody marches to the beat that has already been set by Barkov and Tkachuk, and they see the winning, and they understand what they're getting here, and they're like, why would I want to leave that? And the other thing that the Leafs did, and again, you can do this, it's not wrong, but they paid the Stars all the money in the world, and it's their market value. Of course they're allowed to do that, but when they established the precedent that all of those Stars were going to get that level of money. And now you couldn't break the precedent. Bradtree Living couldn't break the precedent for Nylander and Austin Matthews, even though that's what they're worth, you know?
Imagine if Zito handed out every contract like the Knight extension. Like that's what Toronto's doing. Like they did not say no to anybody ever. And they did not really extract anything, any sort of concessions. They didn't even extract better timing. They didn't, you know, like Zito's great at knowing when to sign people for, you know, for the strict majority of these, knowing when to sign, knowing how to set it up. And it was, he got a big assist from Talon. Now, I don't want to say Talon should take credit for this or get a lot of credit for this, but Talon created an opportunity for Zito to really run with it. And Zito took the pattern and the structure that was in place and saw, okay, Talon was able to convince Barkov and Huberto and Ekblad to put in these deals and to put themselves into a structure for the team and be an example. I can get them to do it again with a better vision and with a better team and better results. I can get the whole team to do this. And when Forsling signs 8 years, 575, I mean, that sends a message to Montour, I think. That sends a message to Ekblad, I think, that like Ekblad knows my next contract. Like, if I want to be a Panther for life, I got to take a contract that says I want to be a Panther for life. I know that comes with the concessions because Bob is playing, you know, that $10 million you were hoping you were going to get when Bob goes off to Russia into the sunset is extending. He might play out the entire contract.
Going to play out the entire contract at this
point. Well, here's what I'll say. If they win a cup in the next 2 years, I don't think he plays the final year. I think he walks away and retires, and they give him a little front office job.
Well, we'll see. I mean, let's get to them winning the cup first, because that's not by any means a guarantee. I did want to say one more move because of the goalie move. You were correct. It was Magnus Helberg.
Yeah, I was wrong. I was wrong about one thing, that the defenseman would be right-handed. Wrong about that in the offseason, that they'd get at least one right-handed defenseman. But what I can say is I'm so happy that the Florida Panthers, with an old-school coach who was so right-left dominant and dependent.
Well, you know, we were wrong about that, too.
They're literally going to go from planning the year with Maurice to finishing the year with Maurice, where they just did not care once about handedness.
And you know what? I made sure in the season preview with David Dvorak to ask about that, because you brought it up and how married they were to it last year and how we got mad about Mark Stahl always playing.
He's been married to it since the Hartford Whalers.
And this is the other thing that, and I want to mention it when we talk about teams and other teams in the deadline that I want to focus on, but like, he's adapted as well, and the way they've managed I'd like to see maybe a tiny bit more rotation, but like, they're playing so well you can't take players out of the lineup unless they're hurt or they have other things going on. But like, do you remember hearing about the Leafs? Oh, they have six left shot defensemen. Do you know who else had six left shot defensemen and it didn't matter at the start of the season? The Florida Panthers. And fine.
I love when they talk about, you know, some teams, I think like the Penguins and stuff were talking about injuries and stuff that they're dealing with, or the Senators, were talking about injuries when they were playing the Panthers recently, that they were dealing with, and I was like, come on, like that's not too bad. But every team's going to do that, and what I've just been really just excited to
We're
see.
covering and following and rooting for a team that has become everything you wanted it to become and is doing it even better than we thought they could do it.
Yeah, but like they got the right ideas. Like you look at Bjornfoot and you're thinking, okay, what are his strengths? His skating, his thinking, his ability to play the position first and foremost, which is defense, and be a facilitator where he doesn't always need the puck. There's a lot of defensemen who are really great, but they need to be getting the puck a lot. They need to be rushing the puck a lot, just to. And I don't mean this as a negative, because I have him on my fantasy team every year. I think he's developing into a great defenseman, Keandre Miller. He needs the puck a lot. He needs to get involved in the play a lot and make big plays. And whether it's hits or shots or goals or rushes, that's great, but you can't have every defenseman be like that, because then every defenseman is not going to be able to get into every game, because there's just so only one puck. There's only so many guys you're going to be able to throw hits against and everything like that. That I like the guys like Forsling, Bjornfoot, guys like Ekman-Larsson, who are they excel and they find the next level when they're in a groove. And to find your groove, you don't necessarily need to make little plays. You just need to get in a rhythm. And you can do that with just simple plays, and those are easy to repeat, which means it's easy to get in a rhythm. And I think those guys are more consistent, and in the big moments and in the playoffs, I think they're going to show up and they're going to have more mental toughness and more mental strength to push through and find the clean passes out of the zone. Find the way to get around the net and evade pressure without just chucking the puck into the slot or up the boards to the point so that they can just get a shot on net or whatever. Because if we know anything about the playoffs, is sometimes goals come when you least expect them at the end of a period off a broken play or something. And it defines the series. And when you win, it's one of the best things in the world. And when you lose, it's one of the most unfair things. So that's my little thing on what I like about the Panthers and what they're doing with defense, and the Swedes. I love it.
It's like our dream come true in pretty much every way possible.
And I'm happy they didn't trade Nico Mikkola like Buchogross wanted.
Or Lundell, which was rumored all the time, and I never understood it, and it made no sense. As you pointed out rightly, what team going for the Stanley Cup trades away a defensively great third line center? That's what everybody wants. And the Panthers just happen to have a very young version of what everybody looks for at the trade deadline. The only reason why he's not as good as he could be is because he's often playing with line mates that aren't as good as they should be. He's got a lot more to give, and last year he was one of their most consistent players in the playoffs.
I'm a big I think there is not one person on the team that doesn't have a value in their current role. Like, excuse me, Lorenz got more valuable because now it's not a cap issue thing. Now it's not like this or that. Like, he's basically on the team through the end of the year, and then he's like the 16th forward, and for that he's great. Like, that's somebody, if you ever get into that position, he's gonna at least be serviceable. And
Nick Cousins has his role. Nick Cousins
I'm
has his
excited
role.
for me. I was like, okay, there were some guys I would rather have, but they got good enough guys. We'll see how quickly Okposo gets in the games.
He's not supposed to play. You're listening to this Saturday, a rare Saturday podcast drop for us. He's not playing in the game against the Flames. I would expect him to play one of the games on the road trip. And I think they'll ease him in slowly. But I do expect him to be playing pretty much every playoff game unless something happens. Like, that's what they want him for. And they're going to be protecting him. I think they're going to do some protecting of players as we get down the stretch, but we'll see.
Yeah. So then it basically becomes Lomberg, Gajovic, and Cousins basically fighting for that one remaining spot.
That's how it should be.
I'd give it to Lomberg. We'll see how it goes. It's going to be interesting. I was surprised with how, how it seems to be. The NHL is growing a little more into the haves and have-nots. The teams that can dominate on the ice and dominate the deadlines and seem to make the trades that others can't make and get better value than others seem to be the same sort of teams more recently.
Some teams are just better run than others, and that's pretty obvious. I have some questions about a few of them, and I will get to them later, but I do have to spend a minute talking about the Flyers because they were active. We mentioned it earlier about an hour ago. But I wanted, because you were right about how they were gonna, let's just talk about what they have ended up doing. So firstly, what do you think about they traded Walker to Colorado, and I want to spend some time talking about the Avs because you like them, and they did some things that I was very intrigued by.
Yeah, go Avs.
And they also ate Ryan Johansson's contract. Fine, they could do that. And that's perfectly acceptable. I mean, it was a 2025 first, but they have two firsts now for the next couple years, and they could use them any way they want. To me, and you didn't like the Eric Johnson thing, I think what that is, and he's not great anymore. Sabres fans didn't like him. He definitely was overpaid. He's a veteran defenseman who, if the Flyers actually get their guys back, and that's the question, are they going to get their guys back that are hurt? Like, he's fine. I think they wanted to show the room that, yeah, we traded away Walker. We have to stay true to our plan, but we're not going to totally give up on you. Now, I think you could have done that even with Ginning and Attard, you know, who played pretty well. Like, you might as well give them the tough games and have them learn, you know what I mean? Like, Eric Johnson doesn't add you much that those two don't already give you, in a way. And I know you didn't like the Seeler contract either, which I don't think you should be giving that kind of defenseman 4 years. Now, the only good thing about it is that kind of defenseman is always valuable, so
well,
if you need to trade it, you can
gotta
trade it.
You got to give him the extra year so you don't give him the $3 million cap hit, because, you know, you got to sign him. Got to.
We've been positive about Briere. I've liked a lot of the things that they've done.
It's just like, okay, Sean Walker trade, that's great. You had to really force it through. So you're getting a conditional first now, you know, but you got Johansson. You basically are just paying money for that to deal with Johansson. Does not sound like he's going to touch the Flyers.
No, he's getting it bought out.
Yeah. So then you're basically trading Walker for a first, and then, I mean, a second, and then buying to turn it into a first. And since you're buying to turn it into a first, you're not getting the best first. You're getting the 2025. Well, actually, I would say, if you ask me, and it seems the consensus is the 2025 first is viewed as more worthwhile because the first round is supposed to be deeper. But, you know, if that was the case, I would have expected to see more 2024 first moves than 2021st, when first were pretty hard to move. So like the Walker deal, that's what you had to make. So you made that. So you made a step in the right direction. The John, then you help Vegas. They took $1.2 million for Vegas for a fifth rounder. That was, I think, a little under the, but around the going rate for this draft this year. But this year, I thought the cost to eat contracts was not worth it. I mean, yeah, if you were going to do nothing else. But if I'm the Flyers, I'm not helping Vegas. Screw Vegas. That pissed me off. So, you know, for a fifth, and then you're turning around and giving a fourth for Eric Johnson. And it's like, that's just like a lot of stuff. Like at that point, you might as well have just kept Walker. Like, whatever.
Well,
but
and
no.
Then the Sealer contract, because the Flyers needed to keep one of them and sell the other one off.
That was what really got me, is they accepted the premise that they couldn't do both, that they had to at least do one and one or keep both. And that bugged me, because if they're willing to entertain the idea of screw the rebuild, keep both and go for it, they should have at least entertained the idea of screw going for it, double down on the rebuild.
Maybe we can get there anyway, because we're already
but
here.
Half measures, though, is what gets you a guy like Jamie Drysdale for Gauthier, which maybe is the best you're going to get. But we've already seen the ups and downs of Drysdale, both the injuries and the low IQ and the desperation plays, which end up costing his team.
I think the other thing that worries me from the Flyers' perspective,
he's a good player and he was worthwhile to get, but there's, you know, I think a lot of Briere's, Sam Cataldi wrote a piece saying if Briere's already, you know, stealing trades and things like that and getting the better of GMs and stuff like that. And I'm like, no. Maybe he's doing the best he can in the situation and it's going well. But I don't necessarily – I mean, they lost – they got in a fifth and traded out a fourth. That's a net loss. They got a – they bought a first-round pick for Walker. And
by
that's
eating
what
money.
They did.
But
and
I think the other thing, though, that I – am not a huge
they
fan
got a
of.
Guy who is struggling to play for Buffalo.
Yeah, I know, but here's the other thing that I find a little worrying. Here's the thing that I find a little worrying about the Flyers. If you go to their cap friendly page, there aren't a lot of pending restricted or unrestricted free agents coming down the pike. They already gave Tippett a long-term deal, which, fine, he earned it. Paling is, you know, he's done his role, but, you know.
Paling was a guy that should have been traded. Like, if I was the Panthers, like, that's a guy who, he was re-signed so long ago, he didn't even make it onto trade boards, but he would have been on there, because he's a guy who's in form, scoring a bit for a fourth-line guy. But he's young, he's got a lot of energy, he's good defensively, he's, you know, can play center, can play all the wings. Like, that should have been that could have been a third and change. Instead,
but
that's
here's
guy,
my concern is just that they've locked themselves in to a lot of guys. Now, that isn't to say that they won't get rid of Morgan Frost or that they won't buy out other players or what have you. But it just feels like they've locked themselves in a way that they don't need to.
I think that the Briere and Jones and all of this, they're so half-measured. They took, instead of going winning now or winning a couple years into the Mishkov era, they decided that they want to win the first year Mishkov's here. And they're trying to do that with what they're kind of going now. So I think you're going to see they have a lot of forwards that are signed like this year and next year.
Mm-hmm.
And then like kind of it starts to filter out. And I think you're going to start to see them move on from guys this summer, and they're going to start assembling a team. And their hopes is that 2025 through 2027, they start winning playoff series, and Mishkov's here, and everything's going well. And I'm thinking, you need to start getting a core that's closer to his age. You don't want Mishkov coming over at 21, and the core's 25, 26 or whatever, and he's kind of the add-on piece and just like the young star and all of that. I don't know if that's the way to play it.
What you're saying is it's kind of like the rebuild in reverse. It's like you start with Connor Bedard and then you add everything else around him, which is what how most of these rebuilds go. What you're saying is you think the Flyers, I mean, they can turn down the playoff revenue, but like the point is like basically they're building the team before Mishkov actually shows up. And that doesn't happen very often.
He's going to be 21, and so he's going to be better than a usual rookie, but he's still going to be a rookie. So he's they're going to really have the best chance to win when he's 23 to 28, probably. Statistically, that's going to be his prime, those years. And, you know, it's going to take a couple chances. You know, you have to build that playoff experience. You know, unless you get lucky, you usually have a couple kicks at it, right? So then when Mishkov's 25, 26, 27, the guys that they're, you know, Scott Laughton's going to be like 40. He's going to be like, he's going to be on these trade deadline shows talking about what it was like to go to practice thinking he may or may not get traded.
Owen Tippett's going to be in his 30s by that point. Like,
I mean, like, yeah, Drysdale, I'm trying to find his age here, but he's 21. So he's going to be like 3 years older, so he fits. But like, there's a lot of guys.
Sanheim will be about 30. Cam York will be a little bit older than that age target you're talking about.
Konechny's going to be like 34.
Konechny currently is 26, but like, they didn't trade him now. But like, there is a part of me was wondering, are they going to trade him at the deadline? Like, Couturier, who the hell knows at that point?
I know you don't want the team, but that's the thing. They're kind of stuck in the 1 foot in, 1 foot out, or like the kind of hybrid half measure sort of thing.
You know what's interesting is you point this out?
Because of the Couturier contract and everything, they can't piss him off. They can't do anything. They can't move him. And so they got to keep Konechny around so that he has somebody to play with. And obviously the fans like him and everything, and Konechny wants to be there. And you're not going to blow up the whole locker room by trading Konechny. But, like, I would be trading everybody. Like, Joel Farabee's 24. Like, I do not care. Like the guys that we need to be focusing on, like, Tippett is probably the only one I would keep just because – You're keeping him to grow his value, give him the resume of a perennial whatever goal scorer, whether it's 20, 30, or 40, whatever goals it's going to be. And then you trade him later when Mishkov's here and you kind of know what you need and you're replenishing all that stuff. But, like, I don't think you're winning with Owen Tippett here. Or if you do, he's the veteran second. You know, it's going to be a whole different – like when Owen Tippett's prime – you're building.
You know what's interesting about it for me?
It doesn't make sense.
It isn't just that it doesn't make sense or that it's kind of a rebuild being done in reverse because of Mishkov and the position that the Flyers were in when they drafted him, which, again, objectively the right call. It's that there's all these teams in the messy middle that we talk about that can't decide whether they want to stop competing or what have you. And you're normally thinking of a Calgary or an Islanders or a team like maybe Tampa whose winning window is possibly closing, but I will never believe that until I see it. But what the Flyers are in the messy middle of, it's in the messy middle of, do we actually open our winning window or not? We're trying to walk and chew gum at the same time, which you can do, but they're not doing it as gracefully, I think, is
because if you're going to do it, you got to be like, you got to have those tough talks. Like, okay, if we're going to do it, that means we need to have centers in their prime in 3 years. If their plan is to draft them in the first round in 2024, I don't know if that's a good plan.
But the other problem is, like, if that is your plan, then you should probably be bad because the draft has a deep drop off and it's not guaranteed that you're going to be able to use your first, which will be later teens, and Florida's first, which at worst is 28. You know, if they win the President's Trophy, or 27. Like, are you going to be able to use that to get up into the top 10 and get the center you want without being, if you make the playoffs? Like,
no,
if that's your
you
goal,
can,
you know what I mean?
You can use a guy like, let's just say, Scott Laughton to trade for a younger center. Now, obviously, this is somebody that's hurt and the Montreal's not going to trade him, but you can make that trade for a Kirby Doc sort of player. At least because you're going to need some centers. Yeah, you're going to need to draft centers. You're going to need to draft a center. This year, you have four first-round picks in the next 2 years. Two of them should probably be centers, if not three. Like, because they're just that bereft of centers, and centers are that important. If you look at the best teams in the NHL, the teams that are run well that we were talking about, and, you know, they're the team with a bunch of centers. Look at the teams that, like, should, that are good but necessarily aren't run well. They have a bunch of everything else, but their centers are either underperforming, overpaid, or, like, missing.
Or the teams that are supposed to take the next step but can't. Your Buffaloes, yeah. Your Ottawas
world. Or the teams that are kind of falling off, but you don't really see it as much, like Boston. Like, they have a lot of points, but they're losing a lot of games in the third. They're losing leads in the third period and then losing those games in overtime.
The kings of
that,
the loser point, the Boston Bruins.
That shows you that, you know, they're being hurt by their lack of center depth, that they're losing leads repeatedly in the third period and then losing games,
mm-hmm.
You know? So, like, if I'm Philadelphia, I would have been trying to, you know, Carolina moves some good prospects. I mean, I know they're kind of getting shit on because they're not in the NCAA and have Canadian or American names, but, you know, Ville Koivunen was a guy I really wanted. I ranked high, and he's scoring like crazy in Finland right now.
And is only playing in Finland because Carolina botched their AHL situation.
Yeah.
We forget that.
Yeah, and one of the guys that they traded in the AHL, Ponomarev, I really like. I think he's a guy that has a really heavy and skilled shot. And I thought he would be a guy valued more by people, but I guess they just see the names and they just see, oh, they're not.
I want to get to everyone else after we talk about Colorado, because they did some things that were interesting to me, and I wanted to talk about it in context of the Avs of last year and the problems that they had, because last year they reminded me, the Avs, of a much better version of the late Talon era Panthers, which we were talking about earlier, to circle back to it. When Barkov was on the ice, they dominated, they killed you, they crushed you, and then you got absolutely everything you wanted when everybody else was on the ice. And that was the Avs last year. They had seven forwards that could hurt you, and then everybody else was a black hole. And this year, they get Mittelstadt for Byram. They get Walker to replace Byram, essentially. They add some bigger body forwards, right? You know what I mean? And does it? I don't know if it signals a different approach, but, like, this was a team that wasn't all that different from a year ago, where they just didn't have the depth, particularly at center. When we talked about it, like, you've got maybe, I mean, Barkov is, but, like, you've got Nathan McKinnon, enough said. But then insert whoever here, and now they're definitely deeper. I think they're a little bit more well balanced. Are they better? And in context of the West, where everyone loaded up, what do you think? Because, like, the Avs are so interesting right now with what they're doing.
Yeah, I think they're better because they got guys who are not going to let them down. Like, I
think
that's.
What do you think about Mittelstadt? Because we heard those rumors that the Sabres weren't really necessarily going to want to give him the kind of money they were giving to their other guys. And now he goes to Colorado, where there's going to be a lot of expectations on him as the guy behind Nathan McKinnon. Now, he's not going to have terrible line mates. Like, Nichushkin's probably going to be on that line at some point, and you know, it's not going to be awful, but like the expectations are really high because when they won the cup, that 2C was Kadri, and, you know, Nazem Kadri did a really good job of that. Like, can Mittelstadt do that? I think there's signs that he can, and it's the Avs, so you figure they're going to be doing things right, but
The pressure isn't going to be, can he be close to Kadri? It's, can we get what we were asking Johansson to give us that he couldn't give us? And I think he can do that.
Mm-hmm.
The question is, will the moment of the playoffs overwhelm him or not?
I mean, because that's is the other the part question. Of it. It's a very good point because he's never played in it before. And also, like, the odds are, if you're Colorado at this point, you might play either Winnipeg or Dallas, and they're going to throw something at you, and the pressure's going to be high, because McKinnon's going to do what he always does, and then to keep, as you like to talk about, keep the momentum going, to keep the rhythm going, you're going to ask a lot of Mittelstadt to keep it ticking over, and is he going to be able to do that? That's a question. Like, I don't think that swapping Walker for Byram is a terrible idea, because at some point with Byram, like, he was playing third pair. We never quite saw the player that was the best player, arguably, in the 2022 final.
Byram's a better Drysdale, but I've been saying that for...
Well, we could talk about that vis-a-vis the Sabres and a question I have about them, but I think for Colorado, it's interesting because, like, they haven't drafted all that well in recent years. You know, like, since Makar, their first round picks have been not great. You know, like, we like to think of this as, like, just incredible, and it is an incredible organization, but they're not drafting particularly well, and they actually do have, like, picks as opposed to trading them away. They flipped a lot of those guys already, you know, the guys to get Lekin and things like that. So my question is, like, do you think that they can hang in this? Because last year, the Kraken were just deeper, and the Kraken won because they were deeper.
Look at this roster, and I like it better than the Oilers. And the Oilers are the best team and everything.
I don't think the Oilers are the best team in the West.
But that's what I'm like.
I can make an argument that Dallas is the best team in the West.
I'll say this. I think Colorado's done well for drafting. Their sixth round pick this year was just traded for Trennan. And on the TSN trade coverage, they're talking about how well Hansel's done since the draft. He's really blossomed already, this, that, and the other thing. He plays in the WHL, so of course TSN loves to, you know,
and to
talk
be clear,
about that.
I like getting Duhaime, Florida guy, and Trennan as just, you know, they're better than what they had.
I there's some, like, Justin Barron was a good pick. They traded him. Oscar Lawson, I think, is a good pick, and eventually he'll be ready for the NHL, and he's kind of bubble. Yeah, but he's kind of on the bubble now. I don't think he's an everyday guy, especially for the playoffs. But then, you know, 2022, they had two picks, a sixth and a seventh round pick. I'm not going to talk about that, but shout out Midland Academy.
Yes.
And then last year, Callum Ritchie, I didn't like that pick, but a lot of people do. The Guliaev defensive pick, I like that pick. And then we talked about the sixth round pick, and, you know, that's three decent picks. I think that they're a team that has a lot more misses than other teams we've been talking about. So I don't think that they're the best run team, but I think they're good enough, and they have the talent that's sticking around that, yeah, they might not be a contender every year, but I think that they're a player this year, simply because McKinnon's just on another level. The team's playing better than last year. They have more depth than last year.
And they're healthier
than last year.
And I think the best team in the West right now is Dallas, but that's my opinion.
I do as well. I think just the way that they are able to constantly generate offense, Logan Stankoven, rookie coming up and killing it. Wyatt Johnson did that when he was a rookie, and now
Harley,
he's continued it.
Becoming much better.
I mean, and then you got, you know, Hintz, Robertson, you know, Sagan. I mean, Ben's Ben's kind of their Okposo, you know.
He's
kind
still
of,
doing what they're doing, and like and they still have Heiskanen, and they still have like, and they've
oh,
got
yeah.
the goalie. Yeah, I mean,
I, the West is going to be tough, but
the West is brutal, man.
The thing is with the West, I personally think the West is more high end, high paced, running gun, more up and down. It's a because they have the McKinnon and the McDavid, and everybody's kind of reacting off of that, and those guys kind of dictate the way those two divisions play. But the East, if I'm Florida, I'm thinking, don't worry about the West. Whatever happens in the West happens in the West. I like the moves they did. I think there's a lot of teams in the East, like Carolina, and I think the Rangers are those three teams right now, I think, are the favorites to me.
Oh, I don't even think there's a
because
question in my mind. Then there's a gap.
The way I think that there is just a little more playoff big moment play from non-star players in the East. I think when you look at the Rangers, mainly the Hurricanes and the Panthers, but if you look at the Rangers, I think they're just teams where you expect them to be buttoned up and structured enough that they're in every game, every second, and always giving themselves a chance to win. I think the West, you're going to see a lot more. This team really takes over that team, and it's more kind of swings this way and that way, where it's an even season series maybe, but one game's a blowout, the other game's a blowout, this and that. We saw it more last year, and we saw it in the final where, you know, Vegas kind of just ran over, and there was these big explosions and stuff.
And I say just this about the East, because like some years the East loads up. Last year it was the East, and then the other years it's the West. This year the West loaded up. What you're correct about, the Panthers can't focus on anything in the West. Who cares? It's about the East at this point. And
I mean,
you
it's
are
really
right
just
about
your division first. Like, I hate this format because that's what it's about. It's like, okay, I just need to beat my division first, and then I don't care who comes out of the other division. I'll worry about that because by the third round, it's going to be about health and rest and recovery and keeping your head on your shoulders and, you know, and putting the time in the video room and, you know, getting on the same page.
See,
and all that
I,
stuff.
I want to just say on the subject of some teams, I want to end this by talking about teams where I'm very confused because I have a few. The thing that I really wanted to get to was, you mentioned the two teams that from a Panthers perspective are matchups where I could see problems. And Carolina is, look, we already saw what happened when the Panthers played the Hurricanes recently. Now, we also know the Panthers can blow them out. We've seen that too. But the Hurricanes, the problem in last year's postseason was the Panthers had Matthew Tkachuk and Sam Reinhart, and the Hurricanes didn't. The Panthers had game breakers, and the Hurricanes didn't have that. This year, they'll have a healthy Svechnikov. You know, I want to see when everybody's healthy. And now they have Gensel, who can actually do some of that. Kuznetsov has found money. If he's good, he's good. If not, who cares? But like that, within that structure and the things that we already know that they can do, this is a rare postseason where now they actually have that guy. And that is concerning. Now, they don't have as many guys as Florida does. Florida's got a lot more game breakers than I would say Carolina does. But the Hurricanes now have at least one. And that's going to become something we watch throughout the postseason. The Rangers obviously have the goalie. If he gets red hot, nobody's beating him. But I also, you know, the moves they made weren't terrible. Like, Wennberg, we know what he can do. He's perfectly good. I think Roslovic will be fine in a depth role. And they've got players who can keep on growing. And I think what happened in the playoffs last year when they just completely vomited over their own feet against the Devils, like, with Laviolette, who I think is a better playoff coach than Turk in many ways, you know, the Capitals should have arguably won that series if they had more talent against the Panthers 2 years ago. Like, I think that mix is going to be really good for the Rangers. And we saw the Panthers beat them, but, like, I think the Rangers are really threatening. But then you look at Boston, who's got all these points, but they still don't have centers. And at some point, the center depth's going to win out, even though, you know, when healthy, you like the blue line, even though Andrew Peak's not great. And the goaltending, Toronto's Toronto. Okay, they got a couple guys who can hit. Like, it's not about the couple guys who can hit. It's about the mentality that everyone has to play with, that stars play with, you know? And as much as I love those stars, I love watching them play, they don't play the same way the Panthers stars do. They don't play the same way the Hurricane stars do or the Rangers stars do.
It's just complete loser energy. Like, I've never seen them do the type of physicality that Vegas and Tampa have done. I won't even bring Florida into the equation. Boston, like you said, the type of physicality that actually intimidates and wears down opponents. The finishing every check, winning every battle, making guys hate going onto the ice because they know they can't be anything but going 100% all out, because if not, they're just going to get tossed around and lose control of the puck and turnovers and all, and, you know, get benched, because that's what ends up happening. And they end up shrinking because the game is just too fast, too hard, too physical, and they're not so committed to that game that they're already at that speed come playoff time. And it takes them sometimes a little to get going, or in games, at least when we were playing Toronto, that was very noticeable, that it seemed like Florida on an afternoon in the regular season, it took them a while to really get going. And I look at the guys they brought in, none of them scare me. None of them scare me. I mean, if they scare me, if I had to play against them, yeah, I'm scared. But like, they don't scare me as a Panthers fan. They don't scare me if I was a Boston fan. Like, I'm not saying, I don't think Toronto got better. If anything, I think Toronto got worse, because I can't imagine guys in the room are going, Connor Dewar, yeah, baby. Joel Edmondson, yeah, like we're that much better. Lubushkin, like, oh yeah, like you get, like, yeah, you bought in some grinders, some plugs, some guys that like throw hits and some stuff, but like they just saw Carolina at Gensel and Kuznetsov, Florida Okposo, Tarasenko, you know, like they saw what you said, the West loaded up, the Vegas and all that stuff. How do you think in the locker room? Do they think that they loaded up? Do you think that they're really? No, it feels like they did the bare minimum, right?
I think the thing, though, that, and man, it this sounds like Toronto sports talk radio, and it's not good, but like, I do think there's a point, because you watched, and the Panthers' run last year just opened a lot of eyes for me in terms of this, and you can say it, you can hear about what it takes to win, but you don't really get there until you're watching it really closely, and the team you cover is the one that you're, you know, watching do this. Like, the Panthers guys, every one of them, even if they're a skill guy, they're going to go in and they're going to grind you hard, and, like, that didn't happen in the Tampa series that they lost. And then Paul Maurice probably pounded the table and is like, look, this is what you're going to have to do. It's going to get nasty. It's going to be difficult, but you are good enough to do it. And the thing that I wonder is, I love Austin Matthews. He's amazing, but he doesn't do that. You know, I love Mitch Marner. He's so much fun, but he doesn't do that. Like, you need to get that from your stars. And what happens is, McKinnon's willing to do that. You know, all the Vegas guys are willing to do that. What happened in Tampa after 2019 is John Cooper got Stamkos was hurt, but you know what I mean. Point and Kucherov and those guys, they figured out a way to do that. And I want to, like, look, if Austin Matthews starts playing like Sasha Barkov in that way in the playoffs, and then you start to see that, and then you go, okay, this is going to be more difficult. But if it's just like last year, I don't I don't fear it, because it's like, I know what the Panthers are going to do, and the Leafs know too, but they can't stop it.
Yeah, and so, like, they need to do that before the playoffs, because, like...
Like, this is what... Remember the third game of the year, or it's the fourth game of the year, hold on, and the Panthers, without Bennett, without Ekblad and Montour, they played the home opener like it was a playoff game, and it went exactly the same way as the playoffs did, and I looked at it, and at that moment, I'm like, all right, the Panthers are fine here, there's no issues, they're going to be exactly what I thought they'd be or more, and I looked at it from a Toronto perspective, and... There were some Leafs fans. I do watch Steve Dangle sometimes just to get a feel for it, because I think it's a really good podcast. But also, like, I saw that. I'm like, are you guys not a little worried that the Panthers just did this to you again? I know it's a regular season game, but it doesn't matter. But the Panthers turned up like this was a big game, and the Leafs really didn't. And, like, that's the other part of it. Like, when I see the Panthers in a big game this year, other than a couple hiccups, like, they're playing like they know what they have to do, and they're playing as if it is the playoffs. We always talked about playing a playoff style mentality in the regular season. Well, they're actually doing it, and I need and the other teams don't do that. Like, the Leafs certainly don't do that.
But, like, again, it's not a surprise to me, because the Leafs are the four stars, right? It's the core four and Morgan Riley. Like, that's what the team is. And then there's all the interchangeable pieces, and they have a coach who either appeases them or punishes them, and everything's built around that. The Panthers aren't like that. The Panthers are, this is the way we have a team identity, and this is the way we play, and they have a coach that, you know, it is, you know, no, I don't think
no one's that, greater than that the, what issue the team concept
buy-in.
Is.
I don't think the issue with buy-in is just on the players. I don't think the issue with team construction is on just Dubas or just Tree Living or accommodate. Like, they're like, I think the Toronto vision is not. It changes too much, and it's too reactive. We've been there with a very reactive front office, but I mean, they are still trying. They're clearly chasing, trying to prove that they're tough and they can do this and that, but they don't go out and actually get good players. They got Joel Edmondson. They didn't get.
Well, it's not even that. It's like they got good players.
It's 100% that.
Well, it is that plus. They don't actually get the star, like the star, like you can't get only that from the grunts.
They got Bertuzzi and Domi. They didn't go out and get guys who actually put in the work. They got guys who go out there and make monies off the reputation that they put in the work. But they're constantly the ones getting traded and everything, because they don't always put in the work. I mean, that's Bertuzzi and Domi have that reputation. And so, like, I don't understand it. Like, Bennett, you know, like, those, like, Montour and, like, everything, like, their issue is not that they didn't put in the work. It was Bennett maybe isn't finishing enough and takes too many stupid penalties and all of that stuff. Well, Florida fixed that. And with Montour, it wasn't that he wasn't trying so hard. It was he wasn't, you know, his risk management and, you know, wasn't working out, because he was just giving up goals and not scoring any. Well, they figured that out, and they put him a system in place around him where it's easy for him to make decisions. He's not getting caught hesitating like he was in Buffalo. That's crucial, because what Toronto is doing though is they have their core in a heart, and they throw money into the heart, and then they try to, like, surround the heart with the toughest protection they can, and these like, I don't understand what they do, because they have so much money, they spend so much, they trade so much, but, like, they didn't go out and get, like, an actual good, one of the better types of defensemen they were after. Like, they went out and got the Erica Branson type of the defenseman they were after. And then they do that with all the different positions and stuff. And that's why I say they have the loser energy and stuff, because they're not actually doing it in a meaningful sense. It all seems to be lip service or just really, really inept ways of addressing the issues.
So we got a couple other teams that I want to talk about briefly before we leave. You know, we talked about some teams that I think did well. I want to talk about some teams where I'm really wondering what is going on here. And one of them is New Jersey, trading for two goaltenders after you just fired the coach because you couldn't get a save. Why did you wait until now to do that when both of those guys were available a couple months ago? And why did you fire the coach when clear... I mean, he wasn't doing a good job, let's be honest. But why did you wait until now to do all of this? I get Allen, he's going to be there next year, and I get you can see if Kakanen's actually worth something. But, like, why now? Why did you wait on the same day you had to trade Tyler Toffoli because you botched it so bad? Or at the same day you had to do trading away a depth defense? Like, what was the point of all of that? Why did you wait?
My opinion on that is, in hockey, it seems like the limit that players are willing to take usually is longer than it would actually benefit them. Like, they always wait till right before the deadline to ask for the trade or to say, you know, to decide that they really want to go and things like that. And I think that there's two players in New Jersey who are probably starting to get vocal, and that is Luke and Jack Hughes. And I would bet that there's no way that they didn't make it known that they wanted New Jersey to show that they take the goaltending position seriously for them right now, that this is a huge pain point for them right now. And if they want them to stick around and build in the future, do not let them play one more game with these goalies. And I think that's what was decided. The other angle of that is, and I don't believe it because Akira Schmidt and who's the other
Nico
goalie?
Nico Dawes
are, I don't think, good enough to really warrant this sort of protection at the age and development they already have, that they needed to get two vets in because those two guys, it's unfair to them to have them in the NHL and it's going to hurt their development and yada, yada. I don't buy that. I think, you know, they're not going to be the answers. I mean, the guys they traded for aren't going to be the answers, but they traded for two goalies who they can alternate, who will give, you know, the Devils a chance at better goaltending. And at least the ability to say, hey, look, we took it seriously. We know you don't want to play in front of these guys. Here you go.
It's penny for Lindy Ruff's thoughts.
I wish I could have hit the Hughes boys a little more. Because, I mean, I got to tell you, if I'm that team has, like, the Toronto energy multiplied by a billion. Like, I've never seen the guys on the Toronto Maple Leafs like jump around slamming their sticks like while the Frank Vetrano where he pushes the net off against the Devils.
Oh yeah.
Like, there's multiple Devils who are just, the way they're reacting is just so childish and immature.
Don't you think,
and, like,
they could use a little Craig Berube in their life next year?
I mean, maybe. I don't know. I personally don't want Craig Berube to get another job, but like, for me, it's just like, they need to rein those guys in. They need to, like, the team should be building around, should be looking at Nico Hischier as an emotional example and a maturity example, and how they want their team to run and play and everything like that. Because that's what the Panthers do it. They have a Tkachuk. They have somebody that's hard on their sleeve, emotional, and does a bunch of stuff and everything. But the team doesn't, and the team takes on that identity at times. But, you know, for the most part, like, you can say stuff, but, like, they don't freak out and flip out and, like, lose their minds at the refs and look like they're throwing tantrums on the ice. It looks like they're being rats and trying to get under the opponent's skin, but it doesn't necessarily look like they're just throwing a tantrum. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. Maybe that's my biased opinion, but I think there's a lot of other teams that do it well, show emotion well, are young and energetic and do all that stuff. The Ducks are one of those teams, although they do a little bit unravel and stuff, and that's why they're in
the Well, they're not very good.
Yeah, they're not as good as New Jersey and everything. But, I mean, like, I think the Hughes show is starting to get a little much in New Jersey. Yeah, they got to figure it out soon because that will eat them alive if they don't. Because
I mean, the pressure on that next coach.
Pittsburgh is a team that they had a reason to cater to Crosby because it's Sidney Crosby.
And they won three cups.
They won three cups, two in a row. So when he says, I want you to sign the Malkin deal at the and he kind of is like, listen, you got to get this done. I don't want him leaving in the 11th hour. They do it. When he says you bring in Carlson, you do it. And if it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out. But I don't think the Devils are in that position. And I'm not saying that the Hughes brothers are necessarily asking for anything or this or that. But I do think that what outside fan perspective would be, wow, this team really needs to get a handle on what their identity is as a team and become more of a team than Hughes heroics, because that's all they are right now.
They put Hughes and Jesper on the same line, and then that can't be it. Like I know the Panthers loaded up their top line for a years, and it was great. And then the rest of the team was terrible, and like it doesn't work. And
but when they did that, it at least worked for them for the most part.
I wanted to make a couple other points, but that just I'm baffled by what New Jersey did, and they need to nail the head coach hire, man. Like that is maybe the most important head coach hire in the entire league next year. Is what New Jersey does, and they got to get that right because I know who personally a bunch Jack of Devils Hughes fans.
Who coached Jack Hughes in college, or in who? Well, I guess Red Berenson is in coming to the NHL, but who coached? I don't know if he's even the coach at Michigan anymore. But
I don't think you want to hire a Michigan coach the way things are going at the University of Michigan's hockey program. No.
But who coached him at the National Development Program? I bet you that person's going to get rumored. Because this is what happens. Whether it's
if Sullivan gets turfed in Pittsburgh, you know exactly who's going to get rumored in New Jersey.
Yeah, there's connections there. It's always the connections of either the GM or the star players. You know, who was the coach of the star players or who was the coach of the GM?
As I said, I think Berube being a hard ass on them might not actually be a bad thing.
Yeah, but I mean, I'm with you. It could be, you know, they could take the Jim Montgomery flyer when he gets fired. They definitely should wait. They should wait.
Travis Green is the head coach at this moment. I mean, like, they could hire, like, Woodcroft is not a bad coach. I didn't think that Evason was a bad coach. Like, they could, like, there are good coaching candidates available, but... there are other teams I wanted to get to just briefly where I wanted to go, like, what are we doing here? The first team to that effect, we were talking about teams stuck in the messy
second
middle.
Team, but yeah.
Well, or of many. How about the Capitals not trading? I know Bacioretty said he didn't want to go anywhere, which is fine. I understand that. But, like, they had some guys. We were hearing about Nick Dowd for weeks and he doesn't get traded. What? They're still, like, they're in the Penguins mold. And I think they've got a few more young players, you know, than the Penguins do. But that they didn't really stick or twist. They did nothing. And that
made sense to me because they've been on a good run recently.
They still could end up getting hot. This is true.
Remember, they're existing to get Ovechkin goals. Ovechkin's getting goals right
now. Yeah, it is
now.
A different kind of calculation than Crosby. And I just found that weird.
I don't know who, like...
They probably didn't get anything of value for Obe Kubel. Like,
No.
is it worth trading him for a fourth or a fifth? No, because at the end of the day, Leonis is saying Ovechkin breaks the record with us. We print money forever. That's what he's saying.
I mean,
So
we don't
that's
know
what's
who
happening.
Ted Leonsis is if not for Alex Ovechkin. Like that is to be said. Like Ted Leonsis is going and trying to build a rink with
With
taxpayer
Reno.
money in Virginia for no reason because of Alex Ovechkin. Like that is also true.
But
I
like,
still didn't understand them not trading some guys away though.
but
But they did trade
who I
some.
don't know who they were gonna tr they traded and they traded all they could. I don't know who else they could have besides Pacioretty. I mean, unless it was a goalie that they were gonna trade, but I didn't see that happening.
Can I ask another question? Like the Islanders did nothing. They're just gonna have, Patrick Waugh, see if they can carry them into the playoffs on the back of, Patrick Waugh, which fine.
Patrick Waugh, I think, wants to say
He
save our
is their trade
chips.
deadline acquisition.
Yeah, say, well, I don't think they have any expectations of getting back into it. I think it's
Oh,
Patrick
now they
Waugh.
might. They might now, the way things are going, but
I don't think so. I mean, I think they know that they're riding something and it's going to be a hard fight to get back into.
I want to add another team in that bubble that I was honestly surprised that did nothing. I was shocked Detroit did nothing.
I'm not shocked at that because they did Kane.
Okay, well, yeah, and he's been very good. That's
So
fair.
then they and I bet you they probably looked at defensemen, but the defenseman that they wanted, they probably lost out on, or they didn't want to pay up to get. There weren't that many defensemen moved. I think that's I know that they maybe could have added another forward or something, but they also there was rumors that they were going to lose Perrin at the trade deadline, and that's why they wanted a forward, and they just ended up keeping Perrin, so maybe they didn't need a forward. They're a team where they're in the hunt. They're where they should be this year. They took a step, and if I'm Steve Yzerman, I'm looking at the division, and two teams were ex who started the rebuild before me were expected to be higher than me, and I beat them out in Ottawa and Buffalo, right?
True.
And I'm thinking I'm doing everything I need to do. If we do well, I'm going to want to capitalize on this momentum. I'm going to want to have as much capital, as much this or that, because they could have got Gensel. It would have cost prospects. I don't think they wanted to do those prospects. I think Yzerman is much happier keeping the cards he has as this team grows and being able to spend in the future. The reason the prices might have been low is because there might not have been that much good stuff out there. I know
And the
Gensel's a
cap and the
great,
cap stuff too, I
yeah, and I
think.
know Gensel's a great add and was for me was the guy, but
And Toffoli as well.
yeah, Toffoli, another good one. Mantha was a good one. I mean, there
Yeah.
are some guys out there, but I can understand why, Yzerman's like, I maybe they lost out on some guys for seconds. I thought maybe they would have brought. I think Kubalik had a brief stop in
He
Detroit.
did. He did. He was in the DeBrincat trade.
I thought maybe he would come back a bit or
I mean, I
something like
thought maybe you
that.
go after some of
Because some guy,
Beauvilliers and
I mean,
Zuckers, like those kinds of guys.
some guys were go I mean, because at what some guys went for, you could have got somebody for a sixth or a seventh if you really wanted. And, I don't think that's too much of a cost. But again, Yzerman's not a guy who's going to get somebody just to get somebody. I think, he's going to do the Florida didn't add anybody and look at them, or, Kane's our big addition, like he's going to do something like that. He'll
I just
sell to a
thought that
fan
the
base.
momentum that they have and basically being where they are and being close would get them to do something because they just need to get in, right? It's so big to be there and they've been impressing. And then I think I don't know if Yzerman saw that Florida game and then the Colorado game where they just got the brakes beaten off of them. And you're just like, eh, I don't know whether adding makes sense at this point. Because last year obviously he saw his team completely fade and he tore it down. He traded away guys. And I was just surprised he didn't add something. Can I talk about the last team before we end this marathon podcast? And I will say, hopefully more to come in this month in very short order about the trade deadline and other topics as we head towards the playoffs. There's one team in the league that I am starting to have questions about, big questions about, and they were active on trade deadline day, and we've already talked about them indirectly. I want to talk about the San Jose Sharks, because I am starting to wonder, what are we doing here? Like, it's easy to tear things down. It's not easy to build them back up. We understand that. But are you not wondering about, like, the Sharks and their rebuild? Because I just look at what they've done and how bad they've been and how much worse they're going to get now that they don't have Hurdle. And the three retention slots that they used that they can't use next year. So if they wanted to trade away Logan Couture, they're going to have to hope somebody can eat the whole thing. Or, you know, like, they're basically almost done tearing it down. But I don't see the kinds of players that I'd want to see. Like, even Montreal's got more and Anaheim's got more. And these are these teams that have that something already that they can build. Like, what do the Avs have that, like, they've got some young players that aren't bad, but then they had a guy that was in the Timo Meier trade that they already flipped away. And then the goaltending stuff was just weird. Like, I'm confused by the Sharks. And I'm confused by the management and what the decisions that have been made. Like, they were trying to talk about, like, not going scorched earth, and now they have. They already did it by accident because they've been awful, and they're going to get worse.
Yeah.
Like, this is a team that I'm, like, I don't root for teams to get number one overall picks, but, like, I think the Sharks actually need it badly. Like, really badly need the number one overall pick. Because then that gives them a focal point in some direction that they can go in, and, like, a center of gravity that they can build around. Because if they don't have that, then I'm like, I'm looking at something twisting in the wind. Like, we're rebuilding, but we don't know what we're rebuilding to, and we don't even have something to rebuild around. You know, like, at least the Ducks have that. You know what I mean?
That's what Macklin's so Rini's for.
If they get the number one overall pick.
Yeah. But, I mean, that's what they're going for. That's what their plan is. I don't get the Hurdle trade. I don't get a lot of what they've done. But that's what a lot of teams do. I don't get a lot of what Chicago's doing. But now it kind of looks okay because they got their good player and the good player's playing. This is, you know, the year before, like last year, Chicago was doing a lot of dumb stuff. And it's like, why are they doing this? I don't get this, you know? And I think that right now, I think they're building a bad team, and they're going to be bad. And if they don't get the first this year, they're going to be bad. If they get the first this year, they're still going
to
be bad.
Who's the number one pick supposed to be in 25? Is that Cole Eiserman, am I remembering correctly?
No, he's this year.
Oh, he's this year? Excuse me.
He's one of this year, yeah. 2025, I honestly can't remember. Panthers not being involved.
That's concerning,
really,
though, because, like, for this year, we knew for a while who number one was going to be.
Well, it's because I don't pay attention, but...
Well, that's fine.
It's probably going to be... It's probably going to be... Oh, it's Bedard's cousin, Gavin McKenna.
Okay, but, like...
He's very good.
Well, like, the point is, like, at some point... I just worry, like, I'm just confused about the way the Sharks are executing some
but
of the moves
they're
made.
They're building a bad team because they're not getting their pick this year and their pick next year and then pulling up. This is the first of their, like, next 4 or 5 years. I think they're going to be bad for a while.
Oh,
I think, like,
I think they're going to be bad for a while. It's terrifying how bad they're going to be.
And that's why I think, like, you're looking, like, why the hell are they trading for Vanecek? Because Vanecek's bad. And they want to play him for 2 years.
Well, 1 year.
They're going to probably sign him. They're probably going to give him an extension in the summer or something. Or
the
whatever.
Goaltending is the only thing that makes sense for me in what they're doing. Like, that I actually get. I know,
like,
what they're doing there.
With Hurdle, I don't get is, like, retaining cap for 6 years.
They don't have a retention slot next year. The whole point of being a garbage team like this is to be a salary dump for as many bad players as you can be, and then retaining on them when you have to. And they can't even do that next year. Like, At least the Ducks and the Blackhawks have all this flexibility to retain, and the Sharks don't have that. It's weird, man, and I don't get it. And look, if they get Celebrini, then things change.
But this is also – they've had the same owner for a very long time, and this is an organization that could not figure out that their problem was Nabokov in the playoffs. It was Nabokov's five hole. They couldn't figure it out for 4 years. And this is a franchise that couldn't figure it out that they had to turn over a core for how long? You know, like the way they got rid of the core was taking a C off the captain and letting him stay. And then when they got to the next one, doing the same thing and letting him stay.
Their GM did get very ill by the end of it, and that stunk. But you're right.
For the Sharks? He's the GM for the Sharks.
Doug Wilson. Well, now it's Mike Greer. Doug Wilson got sick towards the end of his tenure.
That happens and everything, but you don't let a sick guy sign contracts.
I don't know. They made some decisions.
That was my thing with Murray in Ottawa. Like, it's great and everything. Let him do something not important, but he shouldn't be running the ship if your excuse is, well, he's sick.
By the way, the Ottawa Senators, I don't like dunking on Sens fans on Twitter. I try not to do that. But, man, I'm like, yikes, this season could not have gone worse. And people are saying, like, no, that's what Vladimir Tarasenko with a no move was worth.
Brady Tkachuk to Ottawa. To Florida.
Which goes to who is going to get more rumored to Florida, Brady Tkachuk or Jacob Chychrun?
To me, I'm going to make it Sidney Crosby.
I know you already tried that. We'll save that for another show because this has gone for a while. But thank you for sticking with us.
We already have all the green CCM Ribcorp users, so might as well get Crosby.
Anyway, we will be back with more stuff to talk about. There's a lot of good games that the Panthers are going to be a part of in the coming weeks that I'm really looking forward to watching, and then we're going to talk about them because they're going to be playoff games pretty much. And I'm excited to dig into this because the playoffs are in about a month and a week. And, man, isn't it great to be rooting and following and covering a team that is run properly and is exciting, and people are now realizing is like, oh man, they're cup favorites. Never thought when we started Y Hockey together, when you started it before I came ever came around, that this would be the Florida Panthers we'd be following. I never thought it would be possible. Cool. Anyway,
and now it's just everybody take a deep breath, calm down. Now we're in it. Now this is like this. Everything's about like it's a war of attrition. It's about not breaking. It's about not giving in. It's about not being doubtful or whatever. We have all the pieces you could ask for. I mean, the only thing you could basically say is, I wish one of the defensemen was right-handed. But that was, like, all you can do. The coaching staff and the front office trust is high. The goalie department and their scheduling and all of that stuff, that trust is high. Everything's good. So like if they go on a little skid, obviously you can demand that they fix it and they show up and they put in effort and all that stuff, but like let's not freak out. Let's you know, have some of the patience.
Let me end the podcast with this. Yes, can I end the podcast with this? I remember 2 years ago we said, enjoy what you're watching because you're probably never going to see anything like it again. It's a very different kind of team, but little did we think that 2 years later, they would also be in contention for the President's Trophy. After everything they saw and they went through after that 2022 run, they're back here again. They're back atop the league again. They've done everything you could ask them to do in the regular season. And they've proven that they can in the playoffs. Now they just have to go do it again. And the thing is, they've given themselves as good a chance as they could ever have now and continuously to get there. And on that note, good night and good hockey.